wake up just to get down. I don't know if I can get them, but I got them right now. Hey, I wake up just to get down. I don't know if I can get them, but I got them right now.
Develop these bars for the developing stars, whoa. Wrecked by the stars though, but they know just who they are. The knowledge is deep, man, cause college is bleak, man. Knees are the bees, man. Devi happy hour now. I trust him with everything. Every confidence giving me confidence. Sipping is hopping and really no stopping. I'm making you a champion, y'all put a sock in it. But this is life, bro. They're at it all night though, so you can just drive slow and get down with the Devi crew.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whenever you are listening, wherever you are listening. My name is Skip Newton, and this is the Devi Happy Hour, episode 44, number 7 for those of us in the new crew. Of course, we are part of the Dynasty Happy Hour team of podcasts. The main show, of course, being the Dynasty Happy Hour, hosted by Tim Keller, Doug Eddy, and Tyler Gunthener. They record every Sunday night. Got to give them a listen if you don't already. Always an entertaining show. Tyler's dad jokes never get old. Then the two newer shows, the DHH Contractor, hosted by Randy, aka Memphis. Every week, Memphis brings on somebody new to the show and actually breaks down their dynasty roster and gives them a roadmap for success. It is really interesting. I love hearing it. And if you want to be on the show, you just need to DM Memphis and he'll get you on the list. He is at DFF Memphis. And then the newest show, the IDP Power Hour with Chev Troy and Oklahoma Doug. If you are a IDP player, you definitely need to check this out. If you do not play IDP, I'm still going to recommend that you listen to these guys because they're hilarious. I don't know if you've checked them out in the past, but I could not stop laughing this past week when I was listening. They are a riot. But without further ado, I need to get to my co-hosts here. Let's start with Brian Shikosish, otherwise known as Shaq. I call him Master Yoda, the Campus to Canton League guru. How are you doing, Shaq?
I'm awesome, brother. Thank you. I appreciate the intro. Always a gem by Skip. He's the best. So thank you very much. Yeah, man, I just came out today with a video on the Dynasty Nerds website. Had so many people contact and asking about Campus to Canton Leagues. Really excited about that. Love all the interest that people have had lately. So put a little video together on the Dynasty Nerds YouTube channel. Check that out. And it can send you in the right direction, get you started. Hopefully we start building up this platform into something bigger.
Yeah, I think it's definitely catching on. I think when you get a lot of industry folks, you know, like yourself and Matt and I, and you get, you know, Devi Kane and Ray Garvin and, you know, a whole bunch of others in leagues and talking about it on Twitter, people are listening and they're like, okay, that sounds really cool. We got to get into that. And speaking of Matt from North Carolina, I call him Obi-Wan, but today he's the destroyer of dreams, the master of sniping, his fingerprints all over the knife in my back in our Campus to Canton dispersal draft. How are you doing, Mr. Sniper Matt?
Man, I'm doing fantastic. I hope you guys are. I know Shaq is probably doing a whole lot better than Skip is. You guys might have to excuse me tonight. I think I'm going to be a little distracted. I'm currently searching all over Amazon and in the interwebs and whatnot, trying to find myself a Rashad Bateman jersey. as you can imagine, though, he's pretty hard to get a hold of. You know, Rashad Bateman's a pretty hot commodity. Everybody wants him. So, you know, he's a pretty hard guy to get.
Not everybody wanted him.
So
it's a long story, but hey, Skip Newton, the ultimate Gophers fan, season ticket holder, and what happens but just this crazy slide of Rashad Bateman in the dispersal draft right into the fingertips of Matt, who's picking right before Skip, and Matt somehow ends up with this ridiculous value of Rashad Bateman in the dispersal. I couldn't believe it.
I was getting so excited watching Bateman fall, and I'm thinking, oh man, please get to me. And I saw Matt in front of me and I knew, I was like, there's no chance he's gonna let him slip past.
And you know, and if then once wasn't bad enough, I had to go after you twice, man. I couldn't help myself. I had to get you twice in just the matter of what, two or three rounds? What was it?
Yeah, I wanna say it was a few rounds later. I had Pat Freiermuth all keyed up, ready to go, get my first tight end in this two tight end requirement league. So that's a tough deal. And yeah. Sure enough, Matt snipes him again, and it just kind of came the theme for the dispersal draft. But I still feel like I'm doing all right. I do enjoy the draft a lot, but man, those first few rounds, it was tough having you in front of me every other round.
You know, from now on, you guys can just start calling me Chris Kyle because I am the sniper.
There you go. Yeah, I'll tell you, it's a blast to have you guys. I'm stoked to have you guys in this league, though. Super happy that you're part of the dispersal so that we're all in the same league. So we can all be in a campus to camp together, and it's going to be a lot of fun, man. Can't wait.
Yeah, I was hesitant at first because I will admit it was a combination of two things that made me, you know, kind of second guess it. The first, and that was really the big one, was I have no idea what I'm doing in IDP. It scares the heck out of me. I gotta listen to, you know, these other shows and learn something, and I'm basically just, you know, faking it the whole time. It's like, okay, whatever, I'll just hopefully figure it out as I go. And then, you know, just try not to get into too many leagues. I'll admit that was not much of a deterrent. It's like, hey, one more league, if it's with you guys, it's like, there's no way I'm going to say no to this. I'll figure out the IDP soon enough.
But hey, if you're listening, right, that's why you listen to the IDP Power Hour. You get all that information about your IDP guys right there.
Exactly. It is fun to look at that side of the ball and figure out, you know, what are they getting for points and that kind of stuff. And you learn a lot more about the players over there. So it's already been really interesting, and we haven't even gotten, you know, 2/3 of the way through the dispersal draft yet. So I think we're on like round 46 or something like that out of 80. So we're getting there.
Moving along, man. Yeah. The IDP is definitely a learning curve. I just had a great discussion with my buddy Jim Willis on the Dynasty Tools podcast, just came out today as well. And we were talking about our favorite formats, and his was IDP. Mine was Campus Kin. We had a great discussion about it. I felt like I got some good insight from Jim. I think that's a good listen. Recommend that over there. Just to get some insight about what it's like trying to get used to it. I'm still trying to get used to it. I'm 2 years in. I'm still trying to get used to the IDP stuff. But really, it's even though I feel like I'm swimming still on the defensive side sometimes, I'll get there. And we all will. So it'll be good.
Oh, yeah. Definitely good times. Well, before we get into our topic for the night, which is getting into the Pac-12 vacated targets and looking at the passing games from six of the Pac-12 teams, we do have some news that we need to pass along. I think the last podcast we talked about Taulia Tagovailoa, sorry, struggling with that one, going into the transfer portal, chose Maryland. So he made that decision. So that's kind of a big news, kind of close that loop quickly. Any thoughts on him going to Maryland, Big Ten school?
I like it. I think it's an interesting landing spot. I think with Deshaun Jones is a super underrated guy. I think he's an exciting guy for the future. You got Rakim Jarrett. He's a five-star that made a very surprising commitment to Maryland. It's not like you see Maryland getting five stars every day. And so there's definitely a little bit of excitement there. I think he's going to have to sit out this year, but at the same time, there's reason for optimism. Matt, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, for me, I mean, you got to love a quarterback like that going to the Big Ten. You know, the Big Ten's not all that known for having a great passing defense. So, you know, there's a lot of inflated numbers in that kind of offense. So he's at least interesting for me for that reason alone. You know, we talked about it last show, I think it was, and you know, he wasn't going to start at Alabama. He wasn't going to get significant playing time in Alabama. So I think this is a much better situation for him. And it'll be interesting to see for me, you know, what he does at Maryland. But it's definitely something I'm really intrigued and interested about.
Yeah, you got Dante Demas, too. He's another guy. He's only going to be a junior. So he'll be there when Tagovailoa is going to be hitting the field next year after sitting out. And you'll have Deshaun Jones there too. Rakim Jarrett is going to be developed a bit by then. So that'll be pretty interesting to see what he can do when he gets out there.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I'm going to agree with what you guys just said. I mean, it's a matter of him not getting any time probably at Alabama and needing to find a home. And Maryland's an intriguing school. They've got some skilled players there that hopefully he gets his chance. It'll be fun to watch him and see what he can do. Other news, we've got Clemson wide receiver Justin Ross undergoing surgery for stinger-like issues in his neck. Got to give a shout-out to our guy Jared Wackerly for that one. I saw that tweet from him, so broke that news, at least in my world. Thank you, Jared. JT Daniels is going to transfer from USC to Georgia, so another quarterback transfer. That's an interesting one, in my opinion, because it seemed like Georgia was already set at quarterback. What do you guys think about that one?
Yeah, it kind of left me scratching my head just a little bit, just because, you know, they went out and got Jamie Newman. So, you know, all signs pointed to him being the day one starter and, you know, that offense taking a step forward in the passing attack. And then JT Daniels transfers there. So I was kind of confused about that. But then when you look at JT Daniels in the season before the injury last year, Daniels did not look all that great to me. So, I had a conversation with some guys in one of my leagues, one of my Debbie leagues, about JT Daniels versus Jamie Newman. And for me, I still think this is Jamie Newman's job to win or lose. I'm not all that threatened by JT Daniels coming in. He didn't look all that great last year. Plus, he's coming off a big injury. So, I mean, I still think it's Newman's show to run.
For me, it was just one game, right? I was looking forward to seeing what he looked like last year, but he only played in the one game and then went out for the year with the injury, and then Keaton Slovis came in and smashed. So shout out to Slovis. That's good. I think we have to remember the fact that JT Daniels, his freshman year, which I will say wasn't the sexiest thing in the world. His freshman year wasn't amazing. Let's not forget that he was supposed to be a senior in high school, right? Like, he graduated early. He was playing on the field for USC in the Pac-12 when he should have been a senior in high school. So this kid, I mean, he was very young. He was very raw. And so he earned the starting job at that level, at that age. You want to talk about breakout age for like wide receiver position and everything else? I mean, that's a pretty decent breakout age that he was even on the field for USC at that point as the starting quarterback for the Trojans. I think the kid has a bright future still ahead of him if he can come back and be healthy, if his body will cooperate. I like it. I think he may have to sit out with the transfer. I think Jamie Newman is going to be the guy for this year. I think that was kind of the plan all along. Jamie Newman's there for the year, and then JT Daniels gets in and is ready to smash after that. So I like the move. I can't imagine that Brock Vandegrift ends up holding his commitment to Georgia. I would assume that somewhere down the line, there's a flip to another school at some point, but I don't know. You never know. Maybe he does honor it and stick with it. But Carson Beck, who knows what happens with him too. So I just drafted him in a C2C. That's not looking like a great pick at the moment. But, yeah, those are my thoughts, man.
Yeah, I was just looking it up, and Jamie Newman is eligible in 2021 if he wants to go out for the NFL draft. So the timing could work out perfectly if he has to sit out a year as a transfer anyway. It's not like he's going to sit on the bench, you know, watching someone else play. He can't play anyway if he transfers. So from that perspective, I guess it makes a little more sense now that I looked that up.
And I did want to hit on the Justin Ross thing real quick, too. You know, we had talked about whenever we covered the ACC how we really needed to see Justin Ross step up. And, you know, he had that sophomore slump, if you want to call it that. So we wanted to see him step up and do something. With this injury, I think that opens the door to one of the guys Shaq talked about, Amari Rodgers, to come in. And, you know, people forgot about how good he was supposed to be. So that opens the door for him to come in. There's a lot of guys that can step up now with this injury if he, depending on how long Ross is out, it should be interesting to keep an eye on.
Yeah, absolutely. Other news, of course, this is a big one for those of us in the industry, those of us listening, fantasy football players everywhere. It is Scott Fishbowl season. If you are not aware of what the Scott Fishbowl is, it is an awesome event every year. It's Scott Fishbowl 10 this year to raise awareness, to give money to charity. Of course, Scott Fish, also a resident right here in Eagan, Minnesota, where I live, runs his own charity called Fantasy Cares. You can donate on fantasycares.net once that is available. But the really cool thing about Scott is he doesn't need you to donate to his Fantasy Cares site. You can donate to whatever you want. He just wants to bring that awareness to players out there, to leagues. You know, if you take a little bit out of your league and give it to charity, it is amazing the amount of money that you could raise for a good cause. And there's always needy people out there. So it's an awesome thing that Scott Fish is doing. I am lucky enough to have received my third consecutive invitation on Tuesday morning. I was sitting at my laptop, actually working on probably fantasy football stuff, and all of a sudden the email popped into my inbox, and just stood up and did the fist pump. It was super, it was awesome. It's such a great feeling. It's such a great league to be in. Thank you, Scott Fish, for that. And I look forward to, again, participating in all that good times.
So let me ask
rub it
you,
in, Skip, rub it in.
So let me ask you this. If I trade you Rashad Bateman,
it's all good,
bro. If I trade That's you Rashad great. Bateman, will you send me your Scott Fish invite?
Heck no. That is awesome.
It's obviously as great a tournament as there is. I mean, obviously there's only so many spots. I get that. So, you know, if some year at some point I end up getting that, it'll be an honor. I'll be stoked. But I know there's only so many out there. So I'm glad. If nothing else, Skip, I'm glad you're going to be able to represent us for the show. So shout out to you on that. And it should be a great one. But obviously the ultimate thing to keep in mind is what a fantastic cause it is. And so the work that Scott does is amazing. And we all need to recognize that whether we're in it, whether we're not in it, let's make sure that we all rally together as a fantasy football community for such a good cause.
Yeah, absolutely. And one other thing I wanted to bring up is John Bosch runs FC Eliminators. He's got those started, and it's awesome work that Bosch does. If there's any listeners interested in doing a Devi Happy Hour Eliminator League, please send me a Twitter DM at SkipNewton31. If I can get enough people to commit, he said he needs at least 10, and then he'll set up the league, and then we just need the rest of the people. It's for 17 people, I believe. And if you're not familiar with the format, you do a snake-style draft. I believe it's one quarterback. I don't think it's a super flex, but it's basically 0 to 9 starters at any position except quarterback. And it's an eliminator, so you just need to avoid the lowest score each week. And the last one standing wins some money. The second place wins some money. The rest of it goes to charity. It's just $10 to get in. I did five of these last year, and you're playing against, you know, industry people. There's a ton of them out there on Twitter. If you look up John Bosch, I'm sure it's a pinned tweet, you'll find it. But his goal this year, I think, is $12,000. Last year he raised thousands. I don't remember what the final number was, but it was a lot of money. And I know he's pretty excited about that. So let me know if you want to do that. And we'd love to do a league against y'all out there, and we'll hopefully you get a chance to beat us. All right. I know we mentioned Keaton Slovis earlier. We're going to talk about him a little bit now as we get into the Pac-12, and Shaq starts us off with USC. Shaq, tell us about it.
USC, they are looking pretty sharp going into 2020. I know they're going to be excited for this season, and certainly will be hoping to have one, because they're looking pretty darn good. They do lose Michael Pittman. He was their leading receiver, so that's a big loss to absorb. But they have the cushion to be able to absorb that blow. Pittman was the leading receiver in the Pac-12, 101 grabs, 1275 for yardage, and 11 scores. However, USC, worth noting, still returns the 5th and 7th leading receivers in the Pac-12. Amon-Ra St. Brown, Tyler Vaughns, respectively. They were absolutely phenomenal as the 5th and 7th leading receivers in the conference. ASB had 1,000-plus yards. Vaughns had 900-plus yards. They both had 6 touchdowns. So they are already performing on a level that a lot of teams have struggled to find, right? I mean, they both had more receiving yards than Oregon's. I'm going to talk about them a little bit later. Oregon's leading receiver last year didn't even have what the 3rd best receiver on USC had. So that's a pretty robust lineup for USC, bringing those 2nd and 3rd guys back. And then behind them, of course, well, even in front of them, slinging them the ball, Keaton Slovis, he's back at it, 3,500 yards. As a guy stumbling in as a freshman last year, a 3-star recruit, stumbles onto the field when JT Daniels goes down, completes 72% of his passes, 30-9 TD to INT ratio. For QBs, this was a nugget I really liked. For QBs with over 100 pass attempts, he was 3rd in the nation in completion percentage, behind just Joe Burrow and Tyler Huntley from Utah. That's pretty damn impressive for a true freshman to come in and do that and be that accurate over a large sample size. So Keaton Slovis is the real deal. There's no doubt about it. Okay. Now, USC also brings back the monstrous Drake London, 6'5", 205, an absolute freak. Also plays basketball for USC, not a big star on the basketball team. But just the fact, if you're going to play Pac-12 and be a two-sport athlete and play football and basketball, it's pretty damn impressive. He had 39 grabs last year as a freshman, 567 yards and 5 scores as a true frosh. Now, all that's an embarrassment of riches already coming back for the Trojans. And then people forget that they also have Brew McCoy, a top 10 player in the nation. He had an absolute crazy recruitment. It's almost like Zachary Evans this year was like, I'm going to outdo Brew McCoy somehow. Right? I mean, like Brew McCoy was Zachary Evans before Zachary Evans was the guy. Right? But he committed to USC, and then he transferred to Texas, and then he was there for like 10 minutes, and then he transferred back to USC, and then he ended up with Mono and had a tough journey. All right? The kid had a tough year. Hey, he was a teenager. Teenagers, we all did crazy things and made weird decisions as teenagers. We get it. So, bottom line, the kid's got immense talent. So he's back. He should contribute quickly. That's a safe bet, right? He's a top 10 recruit in the nation. Also largely forgotten, you have Kyle Ford, a 6'2", 212 wide receiver, the top 24/7 ranking. Had him as a five-star recruit, number 31 overall in the country. So he's kicking around on that roster, ready to get in the mix. So the team was loaded last year, but he's another name who could absolutely emerge. Now, that's a whole lot of receiving talent with a fantastic fantastic quarterback for receivers to work with. There's a crazy amount of talent at the top of that depth chart. It's unlikely that you're going to get anyone stepping in off the street to find a role in this offense. But their top recruit for 2020 was Gary Bryant Jr. He's a bit light, 5'11", 164, but he was number 45 overall in the country. A lot of people made a huge deal out of the fact that USC couldn't pull a five-star, all right? But, hey, he was 45 overall. He's a very nice talent, certainly a guy who should develop in the next year or two. They do use multiple backs. Stephen Carr, he caught 22 balls last year. I think Keenan Christon is the most interesting one in the mix. He had a 11, 126, 3 receiving line in just 7 games as a true freshman last year. The kid's got legit speed. And so he's a receiving threat out of the backfield that I like to develop down the line as well. Tight end is not a real big part of their offense, at least it wasn't last year. Jude Wolf might be the name to monitor there. He's a 6'5", 250 redshirt freshman. I do believe he is on that dispersal roster, if I saw it correctly, so maybe one of you might think about grabbing him. I don't know, man. We'll see. But that's my take on USC, fellas. What's your thoughts?
Man, this is such a loaded lineup. I mean, when you start looking at all the guys that are on this roster, I mean, you got two of the top 10 or top 7, really, receivers for the Pac-12 on the roster. You've got Brew McCoy, who I loved coming out of high school. I loved his game. I loved his game film. So he should be a really interesting one to step in and produce early and often. And then you've also got that big time tight end. So, I mean, this is going to be a fun team to watch. And, you know, when you look at Slaves's, his stats from last year, I think he's going to see just a massive spike of production, you know, even more than he already had. You know, you love to see that completion percentage. When you look at your quarterbacks, what you want out of your quarterbacks, you want them to be accurate first and foremost, right? You want somebody that can hit a guy all over the field. And that's what Slaves is. I mean, he's an accurate quarterback. So he's a top-notch Debbie target to get if you're looking for a quarterback. And, you know, I remember he went early in our C2C league, tried to grab him. Was too busy getting Rashad Bateman, so couldn't really grab him all that much.
There we go.
But yeah, I mean, this team is absolutely loaded. So I'm excited to watch them. They're going to be really fun to watch next year.
Yeah, he actually went right before Rashad Bateman. So there you go. You know, when I think about USC, it kind of reminds me of when we were talking about North Carolina with the great quarterback play and all the great weapons. I mean, it's kind of an embarrassment of riches out there in Southern California. I'm a huge fan of Amon-Ra St. Brown, both of his talent, watching him play, and just I love saying his name, Amon-Ra St. Brown. It's a cool name to say. But you know, I've got him and Drake London in our other C2C, the startup that we did a few months ago. And you know, I grabbed Kyle Ford in this dispersal draft just a few rounds ago. So it's definitely fun to watch them, and I'm looking forward to it this fall for sure.
If you grabbed Kyle Ford that late, Skip, that's a great snag, man.
Yeah.
That's a nice one.
Come to think of it, I was looking at our guys in that C2C league, and I missed out on both Slaves and missed out on my boy from North Carolina. So didn't get either one of them at the quarterback position. So I'm a little upset about that.
Yeah, you missed out on the quarterbacks, but you got your boy Daz Newsome.
So. Yeah, I did get Daz Newsome. I managed to salvage it a little bit.
Got him in round 24, so I feel pretty good about Kyle Ford there.
That's pretty great, man.
All right, Matt, let's move on to you. And you started off with Utah. Tell us about Utah and what they're looking like this fall.
Yeah, so when you look at Utah, there's a lot of vacated production from certain positions. When you look at who they have gone, they're missing their quarterback. The quarterback's left, Tyler Huntley, who Shaq just finished mentioning. He's now signed as an undrafted free agent in Baltimore. He takes with him his 220 attempts for 220 for 301 for 3,092 yards and a 19-4 touchdown interception rate. He was an efficient quarterback when you look at his stats, right? He finished the season with a 73.1 completion percentage, which, as Shaq mentioned, was tied for second in the nation behind only Joe Burrow. So they're losing a pretty efficient quarterback when it comes to vacated production. Also losing Zach Moss. He takes with him 1,804 yards and 17 total touchdowns. 1,400 of those yards coming on the ground and 400 coming through the air. So lots of vacated production in that sense. Not much when it comes to the receiving game as well, though. The only guy worth mentioning, at least in my eyes, is Damari Simpkins. They lose 32 grabs to 352 yards and 2 touchdowns. He was 4th on the team in receiving. When you look at guys returning, they're bringing back Brent Kith. I'm not really quite sure how you pronounce his name. He led the team with 34 receptions for 602 yards and 6 touchdowns. Interesting fact, when you look at his yards per target, he was number two in tight end yards per target behind only Gronkowski when he was at Arizona. So that's a fun fact for you, all you guys out there. He's a 6'2", 235-pound sophomore out of Texas. He was a 3-star number 91 athlete. When you look at just some things to keep an eye on when it comes to Utah, they could have a potential quarterback battle coming in. Cameron Rising, he was a 4-star and number 11 pro-style quarterback, transferred from Texas. And they also got a transfer from South Carolina, Jake Bentley. He's a 4-star and number 12 pro-ready quarterback. So that quarterback position is completely up for grabs. So look for one of them to come in and take over the reins for that. So when you look at guys that I like to potentially step up, Britton Covey. Skip, that's a name for you. I believe he's still out there in our C2C league right now. He injured his right leg in the 2018 Pac-12 championship game. Before that, he had 60 receptions for 637 yards and 1 touchdown in 2018. So he was definitely efficient before his injury. You'd like to see his touchdowns climb a little bit, but he definitely had the yards and catches to at least make him interesting as a target. You also got Cole Fotheringham. He had 16 catches for 156 yards and 1 touchdown. He's a 6'4", 252-pound sophomore tight end. He was a 3-star and number 50 tight end. So those are just a few of the guys that could potentially step up and provide some sort of lift to this team. They're losing a lot of production, their quarterback and running back. So lots to go around when it comes to that. But there's also a lot to go around when it comes to receiving production because there wasn't any receiver who had the crazy numbers that, you know, we talked about USC having. So what do you guys think? What are some of the names that you guys are looking out for this year?
You know, I'm really interested in who's going to win that quarterback battle. Of course, if Cameron gets it, he'll be rising up my list.
There it is.
Thank you. And
you're all day, folks.
I like the name Jake Bentley too. I had a dog when I was a kid named Bentley. Anyway, Britton Covey is kind of intriguing. I did see that he's still available in our C2C dispersal. So I like finding those guys that may have had down years for reasons that are not bad reasons. You know, like a guy gets injured, people are so used to just looking at the previous season that it'll drop off people's radar. We all have recency bias. So you can snatch up, players like that and end up getting a lot more value, later in your drafts than you think. So I guess he's the one guy that's interesting to me. He's probably not going to last a whole lot longer in our dispersal draft now that you pointed him out, and we'll see who gets to him first. I'm sure it'll be the sniper, Matt.
I don't know. I think you're in front of me this time. I think you got the pick before I do, so you might get to him before I do.
How about you, Shaq? Any thoughts on Utah?
Yeah, my number one guy of interest is the tight end Kuth. I always think of his name as Kuth. I'm not sure if that's the correct way to pronounce it, but Brant Kuth, I think he's a excellent talent, really an intriguing talent, a bit underrated. He's not a giant necessarily, but a very interesting guy. And he's the number one guy that I have interest in from a fantasy perspective right now, because there's so much uncertainty elsewhere on the roster. Corby's definitely a nice guy, sort of as a deep dig there. I mean, he's going to be a redshirt senior, so he's not exactly, spring chicken kind of thing. But he's certainly an interesting guy for like a C2C kind of value. Absolutely, I would be interested in him there. But in terms of like a typical roster, Kuth is the guy that I'm looking at as the talent that I would be interested in potentially acquiring from the Utes.
Yeah, you got to like 600 yards and 6 touchdowns for a tight end in college. Those are really good numbers in NCAA. You just don't see better numbers from tight ends typically.
True.
All right, we're going to go on to my first school. That's the Stanford Cardinal. Senior quarterback Davis Mills is returning. He had just under 2,000 yards, 11 touchdowns, 5 picks, a little over 65% completion, so pretty decent numbers there. Nearly all of his numbers, though, came from 6 games. He did eventually take over for KJ Costello, who transferred to Mississippi State. So I look for those numbers to improve, and I think that passing game is going to be better in 2020. Gone are a couple of guys who took up some targets. Running back Cameron Scarlett is with the Tennessee Titans now, 840 yards rushing, caught 25 passes for 240 yards there. But to be honest, when it comes to Scarlett, I frankly don't give a damn. And tight end Colby Parkinson is with the Seattle Seahawks, 48 for 589 and 1. And of course, got to bring this up because we got to go back to our dispersal draft, was taken right before Matt got Pat Freiermuth. So when I saw that, that was a bit tilting because, again, was really hoping to get Freiermuth. But so that's what left the Stanford Cardinal. Returning is wide receiver Michael Wilson. He is a junior, 6'2", 210, had 56 catches for 672 and 5. He was their leading receiver. He also returned 12 punts for 72 yards. He's a 4-star recruit out of Simi Valley, California. He does adjust pretty well to the ball. He'll go up and win those contested throws. He has good yards after the catch as well. He can make guys miss. Wide receiver Elijah Higgins is the next guy I want to talk about. He's sophomore, 6'3", 231, so good-sized kid. 4-star recruit out of Kyle, Texas. Was ranked the 14th best wide receiver in his class. He's a 3-sport athlete, also played track and basketball. He played 12 games last year, but didn't register a catch. His size does make him a great red zone target. He will consistently go up and win jump balls. He doesn't run away from defenders, but is still a good deep option because he's so good at going up and getting the ball at its high point. And he's a strong runner after the catch. Very tough to bring down. So he uses his size to his advantage, which I like to see. Another guy coming back, wide receiver Connor Weddington, is a senior, 6 feet flat, 198, 51 catches, 506 yards, and a touchdown. Returns kicks, 4-star recruit out of Washington. Great athlete. He's shifty. He's elusive. He's quick. But, unless you're in a CBC league, I don't see him as a really great Devy prospect. The recruiting class had one kid I want to talk about, wide receiver John Humphreys, 6'5", 205, 4-star out of Newport Beach, California. He was ranked 23rd. By the composite, 14th by 247 Sports. He has long speed with that tall frame to run away from defenders. He does need to improve on his cutting, it looked like from the video that I was watching, and he needs to improve on going up and using that height to catch the ball at its high point instead of letting it come down, into his body. I saw a lot of that in the highlights that I was looking at. Part of that could have been that he was just so much taller than everybody else that it was just easy for him, and could have been too that he was open, so he didn't need to. But I think that's something I'd like to see him improve on, is really getting those hands up and taking advantage of that 6-5 frame. So what do you guys think about Stanford? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Cameron Scarlett being gone, and there's a huge vacancy there. And I'm very interested to see what another freshman can do for the Cardinal, and that's E.J. Smith. It's Emmett Smith's kid. All-purpose back, just outside the top 100. There's a huge void on their roster in terms of who can step in and fill that void. The kid is not just a running back. He's an all-purpose back, 109 in the nation, according to the 24/7 composite. And the kid had, over the last 3 years in high school, he had 107 receptions. And that's pretty rare. There aren't a lot of high school running backs that get that kind of those kind of numbers in the receiving game as a running back. So the kid obviously comes from mint genes. And so, yeah, absolutely. I think he's going to be a fascinating kid. I would expect him to jump right in and have a role immediately, and he may dominate immediately if he's got those kind of receiving chops, to be a dual threat capability. So even though all, you know, the guys you talked about are fantastic, I think they're all interesting names. They're all guys who certainly will be in the mix. But yeah, EJ Smith is really kind of the top one for me, who is really the most interesting of them all.
Yeah, for me, I mean, Now that you mentioned E.J. Smith, I mean, if he can be, what, a fourth of what his dad was, I mean, you're talking about a special talent. So, I mean, anytime you got that kind of genes running in you, like, I'm excited to see what he does on that team. Michael Wilson was one that at least interested me a little bit. He's got good stats. You like to see anybody that can go up and win contested catch situations. So I like to see my wide receivers be able to bring down big time throws and have the ability to make guys miss, you know, be shifty in the open field. So he's one that was interesting to me. But yeah, EJ Smith was definitely the name at the top of that list for me too.
I can't believe I'm old enough to be watching Emmett Smith's kid play football. That's just another sign that
there's a ton of them this year.
Oh man.
It's like Chad Johnson's kid. Was it Moose Muhammad III? There's all these guys that are coming in now. It's nuts.
Getting old.
We just talked about Moose Muhammad III a few episodes ago.
That's right. I remember him. All right. Well, Shaq, let's go to your second team in the night, another big one, Oregon. Tell us about the Ducks. Who do you like?
Well, they returned their top receiver, Johnny Johnson, 6 foot, 200. He was eighth in receiving yards in the Pac-12. But like we talked about earlier, like USC had this crazy output in the receiving game, even though they had the number 6 pick in the NFL draft at quarterback, like a multi-year starter in Justin Herbert. Their leading receiver for the Ducks last year was 57 grabs, 836 yards, and 7 scores. Just not like numbers that blow you away necessarily. So Johnny Johnson is their leading receiver from last season. He's back, but I'm going to be interested to see if he really is if he's going to be their leading receiver again. I'm not 100% sure that he's going to be. Their second leading receiver is gone, as Juwan Johnson. He never really fired after transferring from Penn State. So that's a factor that they have a void there, right? So Jalen Redd was third on the team. He's back. He's a smaller guy, 5'8", 180, 50 grabs last year, 465 for yardage and 7 scores. But really the key name to know for me that's coming back is Micah Pittman. That's Michael Pittman's brother. We talked about him earlier too. Top 100 guy last year, 5'11", 200. He saw the field as a true freshman. 18 grabs, 227 yards, and 2 scores. That was only in 7 games. He was limited by 2 different injuries. So if his body can cooperate, if he's back healthy and ready to go, he could be a guy who rocks in year 2. I really like Micah Pittman and his potential moving forward. The quarterback situation is a big question mark, of course. Tyler Shuck is looking like the replacement for Justin Herbert. A lot of people were thinking Anthony Brown was going to be the guy when they brought him in as a transfer quarterback from BC. The word coming out of the spring seems to be that Tyler Shuck is that next guy. Both are new to offensive coordinator Joe Moorhead's new offense. But if you remember Joe Moorhead's offense at Penn State, that offense, in many respects, is why he got the job at Mississippi State down there. Now, it didn't end up working out for him down there, but the guy as an offensive coordinator is very talented. The name I am biggest on, fellas, is Devin Williams. He is a name that a lot of people have forgotten about. He's gone off people's radars. But look, this guy was a former number 40 nationally overall recruit. That's just outside the range of a five-star. He was ranked by rivals as the number one athlete in the country. You watch his high school highlights. This guy did everything. He played wide receiver. He blocked kicks. He returned punts. He played quarterback. He ran with the ball. I mean, he did it all. He played on defense. He played safety. He played linebacker. He played this guy just did everything. And he's huge. He's 6'5", 210. He's a little lanky, but he's a giant out there. He went to USC originally and then transferred to Oregon. Now, he sat out last year. And so he's gone off a lot of radars. But there has been strong buzz. He was in practice all last year. So people know what kind of talent he has. He's really, at this point, it seems to be, the buzz seems to be that he's expected to start at X at this point. That's backed up by recent quotes by Mario Cristobal and Joe Moorhead, who dropped, by the way, a Chris Godwin reference when discussing the potential role of the X receiver in his offense. Because Chris Godwin was the guy who smashed under Moorhead at Penn State. So look, his offense has also been tight end friendly. That's another thing you might look out for if you're in a C2C league. Spencer Webb could be another name to monitor as a guy worth keeping an eye on as a young guy who could blossom and develop. He's the guy that I was most interested in. They have another older guy that's also been talented for the Ducks, but he's never really been able to keep his body healthy. So I think Spencer Webb is probably the tight end who looks most interesting there. They have a lot of talent in Eugene. There's no doubt about it. There are other names to monitor in the mix as well, but those are my top guys that I would be most interested in the moment. What do you guys have for the Ducks?
Now that you've mentioned Devin Williams, he's one that I'm super interested in. You know, anytime you mention a receiver in the same sentence as Chris Godwin, my ears perked up a little bit. So, I mean, we all know what Chris Godwin did last year, and from all intents and purposes, he should, you know, see a lot of work in the slot this year and feast with Tom Brady in Tampa. So, you know, if this guy's mentioned the same sentence as Chris Godwin, I'm interested and I want to watch and see what he does. And I want to share of him, because if he's going to be that good, he's going to be somebody that's going to be really fun and interesting to watch. So he's one that is interesting. I'm also interested in Michael Pittman, you know, Michael Pittman's brother. We all know what Michael Pittman did for USC, so he's one that's interesting as well. If he can be what his brother was for Oregon, you know, he's one that's going to be fun to watch as well. But those are the two guys for me that were at least most interesting. Interesting for me.
Yeah, I got to agree with you, Matt. In fact, I was so interested, I took them both in our dispersal draft. I love taking big play guys, or, you know, guys that have that kind of talent in good teams and good offenses, and usually things tend to work out. So don't have a problem at all taking two players from the same team and watch them develop. I think I'm going to be spending a lot of time watching both USC and Oregon this fall, because, man, they are exciting teams to watch. And especially when you've got so many of their own players in Devy leagues, it's like, man, it's going to make it even better.
You know, that's really funny, because I was just looking at that CDC draft like 5 seconds ago. It's like, I remember seeing these names on here, but I couldn't figure out where they went. And then I happened to scroll over to your team, and we're gonna have to work out a trade for all these guys later. I'll send you a DM later. We'll figure this out.
Well, you know, I know that these guys are really good. I mean, Devin Williams is awesome. So I think Rashad Bateman for Williams.
Straight up.
Could. Well, I might throw in a little more, but yeah, I think that's all right. So yeah, that is awesome. All right, Obi-Wan, let's go to your second team, Washington State. Who should our listeners be looking out for from that squad?
Yeah, so when you look at Washington State, there is a ton of vacated production to fill in the forms of a lost quarterback, and a couple of lost wide receivers on the team. Starting first with the quarterback, they've lost Anthony Gordon to the Seattle Seahawks this year. With him, he takes his 689 attempts for a massive 5,579 yards and 48 touchdowns. Both of those Pac-12 records. If you look at his passing yardage, he was six all-time passing yardage leader in NCAA history. So, Not just for this season, but in the history of the NCAA, he was the sixth all-time passing yards leader. So lots of vacated production when it comes from just their quarterback. I look for a quarterback battle coming in the form of Kamen Cooper and Gunnar Cruz. Gunnar Cruz being at least the most one of the most interesting. But when you look at the most interesting for me, incoming freshman Jaden Delora is one that I want to keep an eye on. Mm-hmm. He's a three-star prospect, number 16 pro-rated quarterback. He's got a great arm and was even being recruited by Ohio State, even turning down a late offer by them to come play for the Cougars. So he's one to keep an eye out on, potentially winning that quarterback battle later. Some other departures that have left, they've lost Brandon Arcanado, taking with him his 78 catches for 1,109 yards and 7 touchdowns, also losing Aesop Winston, 85 catches for 970 yards and 11 touchdowns, and Desmond Patman, with him taking his 58 catches for 762 yards and 8 touchdowns. So when you look at all this piled together, that's 50% of the yardage for the team and 52% of the touchdowns. So lots of vacated productions when it comes to Washington State up for grabs. Some of the guys returning that I look to really just feast this year, it's got to start with Max Borgi, right? The number one guy on the team, taken fairly early in our C2C league. So we all know who Max Borgi is, right? He rushed for 127 yards for 817 yards and 11 touchdowns. But where he really did his damage, he was an absolute nightmare in the receiving game. He finished the season with 86 catches. Yeah, that's a running back. 86 catches for 597 yards and 5 touchdowns in 2019. In just 2 years, he's amassed 127 receptions for 918 yards and 18 touchdowns. That is insane for a college running back, right? We don't see college running backs have that kind of receiving production coming into the NFL. When you look at it, it's a fun fact. I know he's a white running back, right? So the Christian McCaffrey comps are super easy. He's a white running back that catches the ball. So I know that's lazy, but when you look at his stats, he had more receptions in 2 seasons than Christian McCaffrey had in all 3 of his seasons in college. So that's absolutely crazy for me to think about. So this dude can absolutely catch the ball. So he should come in and take, you know, maybe even take a bigger step in the receiving game, you know, as hard as that is to imagine. When you look at some wide receivers to step up, that's just what needs to happen, guys. Somebody here has got to step up. It could be a mixture of any number of guys. You've got Renard Bell, Jameer Calvin, Travell Harris, Calvin Jackson Jr., some guy off the street. Who knows who it could be, right? You know, there's not really any guy on that team that really stood out last year when it came to the receiving game, apart from the guys that we've talked about that have already left. Some of the most interesting guys for me are Travell Harris. He's at least the most intriguing to me. He's a 5'9", 180-pound sophomore. He finished the season with 47 catches for 536 yards and 5 touchdowns in 2019. He's a 3-star recruit out of Florida. You also have Renard Bell. He finished the season with 54 catches for 579 yards and 6 touchdowns in 2019. He's only listed, though, at 5'8 and 162 pounds. So, Shaq, when you say you mentioned somebody that needs to hit the weight room and needs to go hit the chow hall a little bit, this is definitely one guy that needs to come in and do it. But those are the guys. Who knows who it could be when it comes to wide receiver, but those are at least a few of the interesting names to keep an eye on. Max Borgi's definitely the most interesting guy. And when it comes to Devy targets, Max Borgi is the Devy target for this team. But what do you guys think?
I think it's a great take overall. I like the breakdown a lot there, Matt. Jaden Delora is a guy at quarterback for a long-term interest I'm really interested in, because he is coming in as the recruit under the new staff, right? So I think that matters. So many times, you know, Nick Rolovich brings his guy from Hawaii, by the way. So Nick Rolovich comes from Hawaii to Washington State. He brings that recruit he was recruiting from Hawaii to stay at home and play for the Rainbow Warriors, and he takes him over to Washington State with him. That's his guy. So I think he may be a future player to grab. And in a C2C league, I definitely did this offseason for that reason. I think he's sooner or later going to see the field for Rolovich. If the kid can play, I think he will get his opportunity. So often, and we all know this in the college game, so often if the new coach brings in his guy, that's a huge advantage over the incumbent guys on the roster, especially if they're not incumbent starters. If there's an open job to be had and it's close, a lot of times it goes to the new coach's guy who he brought in, his recruit. And fair or not, that's just life. And we all know life's not fair. So Jaden Delore is a guy that I'm interested in for sure, especially where all the interest that he did have, even though he was only a three-star guy, man, he did have some interest. Like you said, Ohio State offered and everything else. So he's the guy for me on Washington State, other than the obvious in Max Borgi. I mean, Max Borgi is obviously fantastic. He's a beast. I think the question for him, when Mike Leach left, I saw some tweet that he had about, like, it was just like an up arrow with, like, carries up or something like that. Like, just hoping to get more carries because he was so receiving heavy. And so I would like to see what he can do. Then again, in a run and shoot offense, I don't know what he's going to, if how much that's going to change because it's so pass heavy in that offense too. So I'll be interested to see that. I think it would go a long way for Max Borgi's NFL draft capital if he can really establish himself as a runner on the ground as well as a receiver. That would be the number one thing I'm looking for, because for 86 receptions, it feels like, sometimes I look at the yardage that he got, 86 receptions and 597 yards somehow feels low for me on that, right? So it's not like, a lot of them were kind of quick dump off things where he, you get 3, 4, 5 yards. That's great, but it's not, they weren't like big plays either. So I don't know. But the guy's an unbelievable talent. There's no doubt about
that. And I think some of that goes back to when you look at him in the running game. I mean, he was good between the tackles, but he wasn't great in between the tackles by any stretch of the imagination. So, you want to see him at least improve in that aspect a little bit, at least for me.
I like what I saw. I like what I saw from him. I mean, he averaged 6.4 yards a carry, so I like that. But I just want to see him get more carries.
Yeah.
It's just not nearly the sample size I would have liked to see. I mean, there are not many starting running backs who play the snaps that he played and only have 127 carries, especially if they have 86 receptions, right? That's just not nearly the workload that I'm looking for to really feel like I have a rock solid evaluation on a prospect. So
yeah, I think that
he gets more carries.
That's the concern with Max Borgi, because he's going so high in Debbie drafts that is he going to get pigeonholed into that role going into the NFL where, yeah, this guy's great at catching the ball. We know that. We've seen it. He's proven it. But that's all we're going to be able to rely on him for. So we're gonna stick him on third downs. And you're in a full PPR league. There's still value there. But I don't think you're going to feel like you're getting the value if that's the role he takes from where you had to draft him, which is why, I talked about it the other night on that mock draft we did on the Debbie Marketplace. I've been fading him. I'm a sell on Max Borgi right now because my concern is he won't be able to get that draft capital to be a 2 to 3 down back. He'll be pigeonholed, and his ADP is too high right now for me.
I see what you're saying, for sure.
Sniper, you look like you had a thought there. Am I reading you right?
No, I'm trying to figure out how to get some of these guys that we're talking about right now in our CDC league. Because every time I look at a guy, I look at him on Skip's roster, and I just can't.
I may have checked out our show sheet notes while we were doing our dispersal draft.
I'm in my right, about our CDC team. League. Don't worry about it.
The final team. We're going to have so much fun talking about that all year. Oh, I'm so glad I joined this league. Thank you, Shaq. Again, thank you. The final team is the California Golden Bears. That's mine. Quarterback Chase Garbers, redshirt junior, threw for 1,772 yards, had a 14-3 touchdown interception ratio, completed 61% of his passes, also ran for 223 yards and 3 touchdowns. Split some time with quarterback Devin Monster, redshirt senior, who transferred from UCLA, so it wasn't like he had all the work there. One guy left that got some action, wide receiver Jordan Duncan, takes 25 catches for 364 yards and a couple touchdowns with him. But they got a few guys coming back. Wide receiver Nico Remigio. There we go. Had to sound that one out. Junior, 5'10", 180, so not a big kid, had 38 catches, 513 yards, and 3 scores. He was their leading receiver last year. Definitely a big play threat. He's shifty. He's elusive. He returns punts, of course, so we like that. We talked about that in the previous episodes. He can also adjust to the ball and can make difficult catches. And the more I watch this kid, the more I liked. I really expect him to break out in 2020 even further. I mean, he's already their leading receiver, but I think he can do better. I just like how he plays, and he goes after poorly thrown balls. It doesn't seem like he ever gives up on a play. You know, he'll make diving catches, he'll make tough sideline catches. So really like this Nico kid. Another one I caught was wide receiver Mekhi Polk. He's a sophomore, 6'3", 195. He had 19 for 295 and two. He was a three-star recruit out of Richmond Cal. And then another wide receiver, Kekoa Crawford, redshirt senior, 6'1", 190. He was a four-star recruit, transferred from Michigan, just had 16 catches for 272 yards and two touchdowns. I don't think these last two guys are you know, breakout candidates and things that people should be looking for, but just didn't want to mention them. One incoming recruit I spotted, a three-star out of Fresno, California, named Jeremiah Hunter. He's 6'2", 178. He's ranked as the 88th wide receiver. He's also quick and elusive, very shifty, returns punts, so fits that mold that we like, and has good speed and good acceleration. So definitely interested in that kid. We'll see where he develops over the next couple of years. And then they have a tight end, DJ Rogers, 6'3", 230. He's a four-star out of, we'll just say Washington, since I don't know what that town is.
Sammamish.
Sammamish. Ooh, that's nice. He was the 8th ranked tight end overall. And I don't know if it's because everyone else in Sammamish aren't big, but watching the video of this kid, he literally looked like a man among boys out there. I mean, it looked like if I were to step onto a D1 football field and start playing against, well, everybody else. You know, it's like, hey, why'd they let the kicker out there? It was amazing. This kid, he's just huge. I mean, he played both sides of the ball, and just, you know, and he's only 6'3", 230, you know, only, I say in air quotes, but you know, for a tight end, that's not massive, but he just looked so much larger than everyone else. He had good speed for his size, and catches the ball nice and high. So he looked like an intriguing prospect. I know you don't want to go early on these tight ends unless they're just superstars that we talked about before, but you know, someone to keep in mind in a couple of years as we watch and see where his career takes him. Any thoughts, guys, on the Golden Bears?
Yeah, for me, probably the only one that I'm remotely interested in is Nico Remigijo. You know, anytime somebody returns punts, we've talked about already how much we love somebody that can show that explosive and elusiveness in the open field. But I also like how, you know, how you talked about Skip, how he never gives up on plays. And that's something that I really like to see out of my wide receiver, you know, having that effort level and just going all out and selling your body for your team. You know, Shaq's mentioned it before when he said, you know, that effort level won't score fantasy points, but it'll get you noticed by the coaches. It'll get you on the field to score fantasy points. So I like my wide receivers to be able to do that. So he's one that's interesting to me. You know, Skip, I don't know if you can, I don't know if you should disrespect yourself by calling yourself a tight end, man. You're at least a water boy.
I think I call myself a kicker.
you're not a kicker. You're at least a water boy, man.
I like Chase Gavis is the guy that I think is the most interesting name on Cal. I think he's a guy that doesn't have the respect that maybe he deserves. I mean, I forget what the stat is off the top of my head, but it's something where they have like a, you know, he's had the injury, whatever. But they have a dynamite winning percentage when he's under center for the whole game. So he's a guy who's been able to get the job done. It's not always sexy. It's not always flashy. But I think if he can stay healthy, I think he gives them a real legit shot. Because they're one of those teams. They remind me of like a Pitt. It's like they were better than you thought they were. Right? Like, I don't know. Like, to me, I think back to Cal and I'm like, I don't really think much of Pitt. I'm like, geez, what kind of year did they have last year? And all of a sudden I look, I'm like, geez, they were 8-5. You know, Cal's like that to me. I kind of forget that they were a solid team. 8-5 is a solid year, especially if, you know, if you're Ohio State. No, that's not a solid year. But if you're Cal, if you're Pitt, I'm sorry, that's a solid year. That's a good year. So I think Chase Gobb is the name for me that I'm most interested in.
I mean, heck, before last year, Gopher fans would be ecstatic with 8-5 every year. Like, we'll take that, even with the three gimme games we get in the non-conference. All right, so we're time to wrap things up. And when I usually get to kind of the final thoughts here, and I do have to say, kind of non-football, of course, because for those of you that don't know, I mentioned it before, I'm in Eagan, Minnesota, which is a suburb of the Twin Cities, and it's been a crazy week, really tough week, you know, worrying about, you know, people you know, friends and family, the aftermath of the horrible killing of George Floyd. It's just awful. I know we all know about that and the protests and the riots going on, and it's made me do a lot of thinking. And, you know, we talked about it, you know, before the show off the air, and you guys said some things that I've been thinking, you know, going into this. And the one thing that I keep getting back to is, as a 45-year-old white man, I have no history or experience of having to deal with being judged or persecuted against or physically or verbally abused, any of that, passed over for a job because of the color of my skin. It's never happened as far as I know. If it's happened, if people have judged me because of that, they've done it in a way that I was oblivious to it. And I think about that, and I think it's really hard to put yourself in the situation or to think like people who are Black, who have had to deal with that over and over again their entire lives, and the frustration that has to just boil over at some point when stuff like this happens and then nothing changes, and then it happens again and nothing changes and it happens again. And I'm not trying to, you know, excuse the violence that's happening now as a result, but I do feel like I can understand how people can think about that kind of stuff and, you know, try to put myself in that frame of mind. And I just felt the need to say that at the end of the show. Change needs to happen. It's awful, and people aren't paying attention if they think that change doesn't need to happen. It's real. We're seeing it. We see it all the time, and it happens way more than what you see on these types of things. It's happening every day, everywhere. It needs to stop. I'm tired of it.
At this point, if you don't think that change needs to happen, then you're why change needs to happen. Like the fact that change needs to happen should not be an offense to you. If it's an offense to you, then you're why, right? Like, it's like people need to stop taking offense to reality. That's it. End of story. That, like, be a good human being. If we could all start trying to think that way, man, it's crazy. Like this stuff is real, man. I mean, it's real. I mean, I've never had to experience this myself. You what you said was beautiful and super well said, Skip. All I can tell you is that my wife is Black. I've never had to experience racism myself, but I always think back to a time when we were dating and we went into a friggin' poetry bookstore. It was a poetry bookstore, man. And my wife and I went in there, and all of a sudden the lady who owned the store just accused us of stealing books. Dude, who's stealing friggin' poetry books?
Right.
Like, I'm a nerd that goes in there because I like poetry. And we got accused of stealing. Now, I'm sorry, man. We did nothing that would ever make anyone think we were stealing. And we weren't stealing. And the only thing that I can just tell you, I don't think, because I was doing nothing that would ever make anyone think we were stealing friggin' poetry books, there's really only one thing that really that boiled down to me. It was just that immediately she saw my wife walk into the store and assumed that my wife was up to no good. And that's messed up. I'll put it that way.
Yeah. I work with a guy who lives in a nice neighborhood, and he was just talking one day about, you know, yeah, I've been pulled over a few times. It's like, really? What for? It's like, I'm a Black man wearing a hoodie. Cops pull you over. I look out of place. And it's
messed up.
It's like, man.
That's like beyond messed up. I'm saying messed up, and you know what I mean.
I know. And I appreciate that.
I only want to speak a certain way and put it out there, but it's all so messed up, man. We got to do better as a country, because we can and we have to.
From the perspective of a former law enforcement officer, you know, I saw something that I told you guys before the show when I saw this. If you have 1,000 good cops, and there are 1,000 good cops, and if you have 10 bad cops, if those 1,000 good cops don't report the 10 bad cops, you have 1,010 bad cops. And that's the way I feel about it. Change needs to happen. I've never had to worry about walking outside and being harassed because of the color of my skin. But it's time we as America start respecting each other. It's time that we start hearing each other's worldviews and understanding each other's ideologies and where we're coming from and start respecting each other, because that's what it's going to take. It's going to take a conversation, but change needs to happen flat out.
I saw that tweet that you referenced there, Matt. I saw there's some great, great, great things on Twitter over the last few days from people. And that's when Twitter gets it right, man. It's awesome to see some of these things that catch fire. And the one about the people who were saying, you know, that it's so wrong to say Black Lives Matter because all lives matter. And it's like, and the people who are talking about that, Black Lives Matter is saying all lives matter. That's what it's saying. It's the problem is that people aren't treating, you know, people equally and saying all lives matter. That's inherent in that statement. So,
Yep. That was the tweet that I retweeted from Ron Johnson, former University of Minnesota wide receiver, coincidentally enough. But yeah, when he said, you know, when you have a fundraiser for breast cancer or, you know, whatever the disease is that you're trying to raise money for, you never hear people say, well, what about brain cancer? You know, what about skin cancer? It's like, no, they're just focusing on that. And it was a perfect analogy. It's like, right. They're not saying that all lives don't matter. They're saying, no, we need to focus on this because it's not happening and we need to raise awareness. And it needs to be reality that, because they do, everybody's lives should matter, you know, no matter what. So,
let's do better.
Absolutely. Thank you, listeners, for indulging us. Thank you guys for sharing your thoughts. I really do appreciate it. And for those of you listening, if you're in the Twin Cities area or any of the cities where stuff is happening, stay safe, make change. Let's do better together. We can get out of this. We can get better as a country, but it's going to take some effort, and I think we can do it. So that said, guys, let's wrap up the show. Matt, any final thoughts, or can tell us where they can find you and your work?
Yeah, so you guys can find me on Twitter at @DHH_Matt. As always, follow the podcast. Wow, can't talk right now. Follow the podcast at Debbie Happy Hour. And I'd just like to take a second just to thank you all for tuning in and listening to us every week and to hear us ramble about vacated production. You know, I feel as podcasters, we don't thank you guys enough. And, you know, you guys are giving me the opportunity to do what I love and to talk football with you guys. So I wanted to say that we appreciate you guys, and we're glad that you choose to tune in and listen to us every week.
Hell yeah.
All right, Shaq, how about you? Where can the awesome listeners find you?
I'm happy to interact with anybody on Twitter @DynastyTools. As always, my Debbie rankings are available at DynastyHappyHour.com, and I'm part of the Dynasty Nerds team. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, make sure you check out that C2C video that we just came out with. And we got a bunch more Campus of Canton content coming out soon. So keep an eye out for that. There's going to be a bunch rolling out. The Debbie team's been working on some things. So we'll keep going with it.
Awesome. And I am Skip Newton @SkipNewton31 on Twitter. Please DM if you have anything you want to talk about. Would love to help. And a reminder again, we'd love to do a FC Eliminator League. So if you want to get in on that, please let me know. We'll set that up. I'll create a group on Twitter to get that started. And I do also write for DynastyHappyHour.com. So for Shaq, for Matt, thank you very much for listening. Good night, everyone.